Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you tonight to the Monday, May 14th, 2018 regular Othello City Council meeting. If you would all please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon our proceedings tonight and for wisdom for the council as we make our decisions. And now if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Item 1.4 on our agenda is our roll call. We have all members present tonight except for Eugene Bain, and he is out. He's in Cincinnati. He's on a company trip, so I'd entertain a motion to excuse Eugene Bain from tonight's proceedings.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor, we have a motion made second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Next item on the agenda is 1.5, citizen input. Is there any citizen here tonight who would like to address the city council? Please raise your hand. Seeing none, we'll move to item 2, which is the approval of our agenda tonight. I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's agenda. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to the consent agenda. I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
I'll make that motion.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to our current business. And the first item on our current business, 4.1, is public hearing for a 2018 CDBG grant for a new reservoir. I'd like to open that public hearing at 6:33 p.m. and ask for Kurt from Burrell & Associates to give a brief staff report.
Mayor, Council, the purpose of the hearing is to describe the CDBG fact sheet. In summary, it is CDBG projects activities must meet one of three HUD national objectives, that they principally benefit low and moderate income LMI persons, aid in the prevention or elimination of slums or blight, and addresses imminent threat to public health or safety. This particular project that we're submitting an application for is for a new water reservoir. The water reservoir was identified in the latest water system plan, chapter 5.5, which identified an inadequate storage capacity. You guys experienced that inadequate capacity when you had that well outage last year and the year before. It doesn't meet the minimum thresholds from EOH for standby storage. Any other questions or?
Okay, I'd like to open the public hearing portion, the public comment portion of this public hearing in three parts. Those in favor, those who are neutral, or those who are opposed to this application. Is there anybody here tonight who would like to speak in support of this application? Hearing none, we move to, is there anybody here who is neutral to this, that would like to address the council? Okay, hearing none, we move to anyone who is opposed to this application to CDBG. All right. With that, council, I'll open it up for questions. No questions? Okay, straightforward. This is for well 10. What I'll do is I'll close the public hearing at 6:35 p.m. and entertain a motion to approve this, to adopt this resolution to authorize submission of the CDBG grant.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now we'll move to item 4.2, contract extension with Gordon Thomas Honeywell Governmental Affairs. I believe we are also going to receive a report of the last legislative session, and we are delighted to have Brianna Murray and Hannah Jones with us tonight from our lobbying firm of Gordon Thomas Honeywell.
Good evening. It is a pleasure to be here this evening. The city entered into a contract with our firm just prior to the beginning of the past legislative session. We saw many of you at your council retreat and worked from there to develop a legislative agenda and advocate on your behalf over in Olympia during the legislative session. Had the pleasure of having the mayor as well as a number of you on council come visit and participate in those activities. Tonight you have before you a contract extension. We'd like to continue working with the city going into the 2019 session. A lot of the activities that make for a successful legislative session occur throughout the legislative interim. So our hope is that we can hit the ground running and get to work right away. With that being said, this evening our hope is to provide you with an overview of what the legislature did this past session, a detailed summary of some of the activities that we engaged in on your behalf, and then to provide some insights into what the political climate may do between now and the beginning of next session. Before I turn it over to Hannah to dive into that 2018 session overview, I want to begin by saying that advocating in Olympia truly is a team effort. It requires participation on your behalf as elected officials, and the mayor certainly made many trips to Olympia. It requires a lot of time and effort on behalf of your city staff to get us the information that we request to be effective advocates. And most importantly, it requires a very active and supportive legislative delegation. And you all certainly have that in Senator Schussler, Representative Mary Dye, and Representative Joe Schmick. So as we go through and explain what has happened this legislative session and what we've done on your behalf, I want to first and foremost acknowledge that it was a team effort. We certainly played a role in helping the city navigate Olympia, but the role and importance of your legislative delegation in particular should not be understated. They're a huge advocate on your behalf. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Hannah to start with a broad overview of the legislative session.
Excellent. Okay, so as you all may know, we started out a 60-day legislative session in January, and this is a short session. It's the second year in a two-year fiscal cycle. Now, as you may know, the Senate majority flipped this year from a Republican control to a Democrat control with the change in the 45th legislative district. And this dynamic really changed the landscape of the legislature this year. So that was something new that we worked with. The main goals of the legislature this year were to finish their tasks that were not completed at the end of the 2017 legislative session, including passing a capital budget, an underlying capital budget, as well as finding a fix for the Supreme Court Hearst decision relating to water rights. In addition, the legislature was also tasked with fully funding the McCleary Supreme Court decision, which would fully fund education, public education in the state of Washington. There was a $1.2 billion increase reflected in the February revenue forecast. And with that change in some of the McCleary levy swap from last year, there was a significant public outcry with an increase in public in property tax. There are three final budgets, and this year there, as it was the second year in the fiscal cycle, the supplemental budgets for the operating budget included $935 million increase in funding for education, as well as a property tax decrease of 30 cents per $1,000 of assessed value. And then the transportation budget reflected continued project development from the Connecting Washington package that was previously passed.
Thank you, Hannah. And I will just note that one of the things that we're most excited about was that the 2018 legislative session finished on time and with all that's adopted, and that was the first time in a number of sessions. I want to hone in on what our firm did specifically on your legislative priorities, and we were very focused on your regional water plan. At the end of the 2017 legislative session, your delegation had been very effective at getting funding included into the proposed 17-19 capital budget. However, the 2017 legislature failed to adopt that budget. So as we went into the 2018 session, the emphasis really was on enact that 17-19 capital budget and ensure that all of the funding that your delegation had previously worked so hard to get included remained included moving forward. What that meant is during the first week of the legislative session, we worked with you all to meet with the legislative delegation, reemphasize the importance of the funding being included and the importance of that capital budget being passed into law. Additionally, recognizing that your regional water plan not only needs funding now, but needs money tomorrow and the next year and the year after to come to fruition, we took the opportunity to begin laying the groundwork with some of the key capital budget writers. They're going to make the decisions around how this funding is going to be allocated in years to come. We also worked with Rob Duff in the governor's office. He's been a partner with the city prior to us working with you all. We reemphasized again the importance of the project and moving forward. Within the first few weeks of the legislative session, the capital budget passed, which was excellent because that meant that $3.05 million is coming to Othello. You can see on the slide that over $3 million is coming through three different appropriations, $1.55 million from the Department of Health, $1 million through a local and communities project through the Department of Commerce, and then $500,000 through the Office of Columbia River. That one is not specifically called out as a line item in the capital budget, but really is credit to the city's work with the Office of Columbia River. In other words, the legislature appropriated a large amount of funds to the Office of Columbia River, and within that large amount of funds, the Office of Columbia River has made a commitment to you all that $500,000 of it will be spent in Othello. We did work with the city staff to ensure that contact was made with each of those agencies to make sure that you have the appropriate contracts in place. Once you have contracts in place for those three appropriations, the general rule is that you have 4 years or two fiscal years to expend the funds. Of course, the sooner you can expend those funds and have a groundbreaking or ribbon cutting, the better. And we'll talk about showing appreciation a little bit more in the presentation. But all in all, for the City of Othello, the 2018 session was a great success. I want to emphasize how rare it is for a community of your size to receive over $3 million in a biennium. In general, what we advise clients is that the average appropriation is $1 million, regardless of size of the city. So you all, I encourage you to recognize what a huge success this is and what a great job your delegation has done to position this funding for you all. In addition to our work in advancing your regional water plan, one of the things that we observed was that with the city being more involved in Olympia activities, we identified that there are more opportunities for the city to express meaningful feedback and emphasis on different policy decisions that the legislature was making. And I think your legislative delegation appreciates that more active involvement. You are providing them with feedback on what impacts the City of Othello and at what level. A couple examples of that, and these really are just examples, is that the city receives streamlined sales tax mitigation funding. In recent years, the legislature has made some policy decisions that change how that streamlined sales tax mitigation funding is going to be distributed moving forward. Most notably, the legislature enacted the Marketplace Fairness Act, which charges a sales tax on out-of-state sales. What they've said is that revenue coming in from out-of-state sales will now offset your streamlined sales tax mitigation funding. Unfortunately, it's not a true offset. And within the first couple of years of that transition, City of Othello would experience a reduction in revenue. So we've worked to communicate to your legislators that reduction in revenue would occur and made them aware of that situation. And they were supportive, and the legislature at the end of the day allocated some additional funds to ensure that not only the city of Othello, but all the communities receiving those mitigation payments will be kept whole, at least for the 17-19 biennium. That is an issue that will continue to be an issue moving forward as those two funding streams are phased in and phased out. The second issue was one that was raised by Senator Tacko, and was really a matter of the mayor being over in Olympia at the right time in the right place. Senator Tacko is chair of the Senate Local Government Committee, and he represents the Long Beach area. On behalf of his local community, he introduced some legislation to provide communities of your size, as well as around the size of the city of Long Beach, with some tools to help attract tourism and hold more special events and to bring more people into the community. A lot of those tools could have been helpful to you all, and the mayor had an opportunity to talk with Senator Tacko about that bill being proposed. Unfortunately, the bill didn't advance forward. I do believe that Senator Tacko plans to revisit that bill, look at different ways of structuring it, and given our initial conversation with him, I think the door is open for Othello to provide some feedback on how we could be a willing partner in the development of that policy. So really, in my mind, these are just a couple examples of how the city started to dip their toe, or dip its toe, into some of the policy discussions in addition to some of the funding discussions that occur in Olympia. I would encourage you all to do more of that as we move forward in our partnership. The legislature appreciates the more information, the better. So the more that they know about the impacts of the decisions they're making in Olympia on their community, the more effectively they can advocate and represent you. Hannah's going to share with you the perspective on the session from the Association of Washington Cities. We participate in the Association of Washington Cities as we represent a number of cities throughout the state, and thought you would find their perspective on the session to be helpful.
So as the city's lobbyists, one of our jobs is to coordinate with the Association of Washington Cities on behalf of the city of Othello, and in addition to advocating for the regional water plan. So at the conclusion of session, cities found that the 2018 session was a time where cities came out strong. All state shared revenues were protected. There was an increase in marijuana revenue, and in addition to the BLEA classes, the Basic Law Enforcement Academy classes that were funded in the 2017 session, two additional classes were funded this year. In addition, a statewide tourism marketing authority was established. There were some unfunded mandates, and those are generally a problem facing a lot of local governments, where policies are passed that local governments simply can't meet the needs or don't have the resources to meet the needs of the policies that are passed. Some examples of this for smaller jurisdictions include the Voting Rights Act and some of the post-traumatic stress disorder bills. And unfortunately, a number of those passed, those are two specific examples of policies that passed into law this year. And as part of our efforts advocating for the city, we'll continue to advocate that these unfunded mandates are not passed and that the cities are met with additional revenue.
So, and I'll just interject one thing, and that is that these are two proposals that had been introduced in the legislature for a number of years, and with the shift in political control in the Senate, they got across the finish line this year. So this is an example of the type of policies that advance forward in same government or all-party government as opposed to divided government. And is a good example of why it's important to communicate no matter who is in control of what chamber.
So as we begin to transition into interim, we want to emphasize that next step would be to say thank you to your legislative delegation. As Brianna mentioned, they played an integral role in the city's success this legislative session. Senator Schessler, Representative Dye, and Representative Schmick, they're a great team, and they've always maintained an open door policy with Brianna and I, and have been really great partners during session, and have continued to be great advocates for the city. As we begin to prepare for the 2019 session, we will and have begun developing interim plans for the city. Lobbying is a year-round effort, and in order to position the city well in the 2019 session, it really needs, the work begins now. And so that is what some of the work Brianna and I will be doing over the coming months, and that is preparing for the 2019 session and ensuring the city is in place to receive funding and meet their legislative objectives.
And just so as we look at developing the funding request and legislative agenda that you can bring forward to the 2019 session, there are a couple things that we're going to be closely watching around the political environment. First, this week is filing week, and we are watching who is filing for what office very carefully. Already, at least 15 legislators have announced that they do not plan on running for re-election. That is a very high number of retirements. It is the highest amount I have seen in my 10 years of lobbying in Olympia. Many of these retirement announcements are not in seats where there's likely to be a shift in political representation. In other words, a Republican that's previously served in that seat is likely to be replaced with another Republican. However, what it does mean is that we're likely to see a very new legislature. A lot of new members who haven't gone through the legislative process before, who may not know all the intricacies of how to navigate it, or they may be learning very quickly how to navigate it. They also may not have the history on some of the policy decisions that have been made over the last 5-10 years. An example of that is that when we look at transportation funding, in 2015, the legislature enacted a 16-year transportation package. If we have a lot of turnover within the legislature, the new legislators coming in may not understand the rhyme and reason behind how that 16-year package was put together and why was this project funded versus this one, or this one funded in that year versus this one. And that makes the legislature maybe more willing to make changes within that 16-year plan than they have been in the past. Or they could be more resistant to making, you know, making changes to it, but they won't have that same level of history and background. Additionally, we will be watching the outcome of the November 2018 elections. The entire House of Representatives and half of the Senate is up for re-election. This means that there is once again a chance for either chamber to shift parties or very narrow majorities. I will share with you from a very unbiased academic standpoint, if you look at what all of the political analysts are saying about what is likely to happen in Washington State, they're expecting there to be a slight D wave and that the Democrats will pick up seats in both chambers. With that being said, there is a seat in the 48th Legislative District where one Democrat is challenging another Democrat. Senator Rodney Thom is a former senator who, when previously elected as an independent Democrat, chose to caucus with Republicans. He's challenging a sitting Democrat who serves within caucuses with the Democrats. If he were to win that seat and all of the other seats were to remain the same, then Republicans would once again regain control of the Senate. And I would say, you know, pending outcome of August primaries or other polling, that's within the realm of possibility, despite this sort of academic anticipation of a slight D wave. So we're going to be watching that very closely and can advise on how that may impact the various city endeavors as it comes about. In August, we'll have a good sense of whether that sort of academic D-wave has any real legs to it. I've certainly heard other perspectives that say, yeah, you might see that around the country, but you're not going to see that in Washington State. Honestly, it's not my job to predict the future. It's my job to look at the various polling and make some educated guesses. I've kind of shared with you what I know. So setting the election process aside, the governor is going to begin developing his proposed budgets in September and releasing those in late November, early December, usually in December. The governor's proposed budgets are not the budgets that get enacted into law. They are essentially the first draft that the legislature will then consider on how they would like to budget moving forward. Very similar to an executive providing a budget to a board and then the board then choosing what elements of it they want to approve. So that's what we expect to happen in the coming months here. And our goal is to be ready to go and working with state agencies and the governor's office to work to get into that proposed budget and working with the mayor, all of you as council, as well as city staff in developing that 2019 request and what makes sense to move your regional water plan and other capital priorities forward. So with that, we're here to attempt to answer any questions that you might have.
Council? Any comments?
Excellent job.
Yeah, I would have a few comments. I think this relationship that we entered into last year with Sunnywell, I mean, this has been better than I ever believed it could. And as you reviewed just some of the things that took place in the session, what you did on behalf of the city of Othello, looking forward and helping us plan, sitting here in the city of Othello, every one of these council members, except for Larry, he's retired, but the rest of them, we all have jobs and we all are part-time at this, and we need the assistance of someone who is an insider. And you guys are insiders over in Olympia, and you help us get to the right people at the right time, and you know how to help us navigate what's going on in the session. And I couldn't be more pleased. I think the results show. And, you know, not just resting on our laurels, we're looking ahead. Another session's coming around the corner. We'll be spending some time this summer developing that, brainstorming that, setting forth the council's priorities. I know some of the things that are hot in the legislature right now are rural broadband, and it looks like not only the president but also the governor wants to fund rural broadband, which would significantly assist the city of Othello if we could get faster internet and higher bandwidth internet service here. There's also our water plan. There's also the wastewater reuse plan. There's transportation budget. There's a lot of things that we are working on. That's just with you. Your other component of that contract is with Meg, and we have two applications already in with her. I'm just really pleased with how you have helped elevate us from a place of obscurity into a place where people, Othello, and they're actually, they respect us, wouldn't you say, John and Gina, because you guys have been over there.
Yep, mm-hmm. Getting a lot more recognition. And cool. In terms of the contract, I would say, as far as I'm concerned, we've gotten the bang for our buck. They've definitely been worth the price that we've paid.
I believe that in watching what they've been able to accomplish and being there, taking part in what Meg was able to do for us and who is part of the group, they bring a sense of professionalism to the whole aspect of going and begging for money. They do. Mm-hmm. They know who to see. They know, you know, where to go. And they'll advise you that it's not an approach that they would take, and so they're very worthwhile in having on our side, working for us from that aspect. They've done very well for us already today. I mean, we started everything quite a while ago. As you know, it takes time to work through these things, but they were somewhat instrumental in getting the money that we have received now for us. I really appreciate the professionalism that this group of individuals bring to the table for us. And I think it's worth paying for, continuing to pay for.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, thank you. And I believe also on the agenda is the contract extension is before us. Okay.
I have one comment on that.
Yes.
On attachment A, under letter C, it says City of Othello shall pay each consultant's invoices within 30 days after county's receipt. That should be cities. We just need to change.
And for the record, that was on last year's contract. We forgot to catch it then, so correct it this year.
Thank you, Mark. We can make that change, right?
Yes, that's not a problem.
Okay.
Yeah, and if I can just, all the comments here were so generous, and it's an absolute pleasure to be your advocates. And again, emphasizing your delegation as being a great part of the team.
Entertain a motion then to extend this contract with Gordon Thomas Honeywell.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Thank you. Motion's made second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay, now we'll move to item 4.3, residential landscaping discussion. And we have our community development director, Ann Hennings, to lead the discussion. So, Ann?
So I understand that last meeting there was discussion about landscaping for residences. So I've looked into it a bit. I guess the way it's worked is that the code doesn't require landscaping for a year after the certificate of occupancy, but there's not necessarily been much or even any follow-up to that. And so I guess we've gotten to the point where there are some residences that don't have the landscaping. So we'll start doing the enforcement, following up with those, the existing ones. I'm asking you to think about, in the future, do you want to change that process where the landscaping would be required before the certificate of occupancy? That's a possibility. Do you want to see just how it goes with the enforcement where it's needed after the fact? So those are some things to think about. The other thing to think about is what you want to see for landscaping for single-family residences. The code is a little bit open. It just talks about grass, trees, other natural features, leaving it a little open for decorative rock for the whole yard. So that's something I'd like you to think about, give some staff some direction on. For other parts of, for things that other than single family, the code says 80% living. Single family, you could kind of look at it either way because it does say only certain parts of that landscape chapter. So that's a little bit open there. We might want to close that if rock is not what you want to see for yards.
Is this something that you've gone through with the planning?
Yeah, we just
asked
the
question. We started going through it. We haven't finished yet.
Okay. Because I would like to see what their recommendations are. Mm-hmm.
We mostly talked about commercial when we did talk about it. We didn't get into the residential portion.
So classifications. When you have someone that builds a multiple dwelling facility for residents, there would be a different kind of requirement for that?
Yes.
One of the main concerns would be off-street parking. The provision for off-street parking for those multiple unit dwellings.
Yes, and okay, so that was kind of separate from the landscaping, but I can talk about that as well.
Yes.
So there is an existing project where the parking was not required, but we will go through the enforcement process and require the parking for that one.
Yeah. Okay. Paved parking.
Paved.
Concrete, yeah.
Okay. Because I think that in reality is more important than putting in some sort of ornamental landscaping. If the lot isn't large enough and somebody wants to occupy the whole lot and they got concrete, you know, where people can park and stuff, and they just don't have the ability with the square footage of the lot to be able to landscape.
Well, Anthony, correct me if I'm wrong, John, the code addresses both those issues, and it has to be a combination of setbacks and enough land to park. So if you want to build a quadplex, say, on a lot, you have to, it's two, parking places per unit, I believe.
Correct. So minimum and maximum of two per unit.
Right. So if you didn't have enough room to do that, then you couldn't do the quad plates.
Okay.
Do any multiplication that you want. But we have a formula, like I just said, that does that. So it's got to do that. And then, in addition, the landscaping goes with it. So we have it in the code.
Well, with our water issues that we look at, the less that has to be watered, especially in the old neighborhoods where it's not available to get, you know, access to irrigation water. If somebody wanted to do a desertscape or...
Dry landscape, desertscape.
If they wanted to concrete, you know, as much as possible so they could do off-street parking in front of their home. That's, you know, that's something that the Planning Commission needs to consider, and I think moving forward on changing some of these ordinances.
Well, you can't do as much concrete as you want because you have to contain your own water, so you have to have enough dirt to contain your own water, so you can't just pour concrete all around your apartments.
And there's family considerations. If you're trying to do a family complex, you want a certain amount of, you know, play area for children, you know, grass and stuff. So it's, the Planning Commission needs to consider all of that and bring a proposal to the council for consideration.
And I want to ask you a question. In your mind, this process, how did you want this to unfold? Are you just looking for suggestions from the council and then you're going to go back to the Planning Commission? Or you want to have this discussion here with us, and
you know,
how do you want to do this?
I don't know if there's a way that I want to do it, because ultimately it's up to you.
Yes, of course.
You know, typically code things do go to the Planning Commission for their recommendation, but then it's going to come back to you, so you can either provide some direction that I can take to the Planning Commission for them to discuss it. You can just decide that you're ready to make a decision right now. I was asked to provide kind of a briefing of what we do and what we could do. So
right now we're required to do a front yard.
Yes.
Within a year.
Within
1 year.
Can I speak?
Yeah.
Or do I have to step down?
No.
No.
You might want, if you're speaking as a developer, you probably want to step down.
As a developer and as a citizen for the city, too.
Then you probably should recuse yourself, and then I'll recognize.
I think you guys worked it out. If you're speaking from the perspective of the developer, you probably want to step down and do that. The other thing, too, to think about is, the Planning Commission, there's a change that I don't have the code in front of me, but you're thinking about changing the development regulation. Usually the common practice is to go through the Planning Commission, and then they bring the Planning Commission recommendations to you. So I don't know that you'd be, I wouldn't recommend taking any action tonight. Now, whether the Thelen Municipal Code requires the Planning Commission to take action before the council does, I don't know that off the top of my head. But I would just recommend that, I know that process is set up in the code, so unless there's some kind of sense of urgency to get this done now, I would wait till the Planning Commission has done its work, issued recommendations.
It could go back and forth two or three times, right?
Yeah, well, sure.
It doesn't have to be accepted, right?
Oh, you're absolutely correct.
When
I was just saying, not making any decisions tonight.
What the recommendations are, and then say yes or no and send it back or accept it.
Correct. Yeah, we're on the same page.
But that's why we have a Planning Commission.
So exactly. Let the record show that Council Member Angel Garza has recused himself as a councilman, but he would like to address the council as a private developer.
Okay, so we have on our ordinances, we have 1 year for our government.
All right, so we have a year as it is, as it stands right now. So as a builder, you know, we go through the process, through the process of building a home. It takes us 3.5 to 4 months to build a home. Mm-hmm. So the occupancy starts our closing process. So if we don't get occupancy, we don't get a check. So, and many times throughout the year, especially in the summer, you can't find help. You know, I give my guys at our development 6 months to get the yards done. And we push them after that 6 months. And you've seen what's been happening down there. They've all been following through. Now over here at Sandhill Estates, I don't know how that's going to work. There's no HOA partnership there. So it's going to be just like building anywhere. But as a builder, I still stand that if we don't want to go a year, we can take it down to 6 months. I really don't want to wait another month to get my occupancy just because of a yard or a sprinkler system.
So let me ask you a question then. You get down to where they want to, you want to close, okay? And we don't have a yard in. Do you have any objection, Angel, to being a provision in closing that the amount equal to the cost of putting in the front yard is held in escrow? And then when the time comes that...
No, that's my money. You know, when I sell a house, if I would do that, then I have to include that in their price. So I don't, when I sell the house, the yard is not included.
So then who puts in
the yard? So the provision there is going to nail me.
So then
they're going to hold $5,000 on escrow until that gets done.
So the clock starts once you've sold the home, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the person that bought the home.
Not for you.
Not for you.
The clock starts with me for the 6 months, you mean? At time of closing. As soon as they get occupancy, they have 6 months to put their yards in.
Are you gonna
the day of the occupancy.
The buyer.
Yeah.
The buyer. That's the buyer, yeah.
That's in his neighborhood. The
right.
HOAs. Not in the code.
Okay. Okay. But in the code.
So I say.
So what if they don't?
Go ahead.
So.
Go ahead, John. You go first.
You're not going to have HOAs in the new development, say Jill. So you're saying. That from the time you build the home until there's somebody that moves into it, that the ordinance only gives a year to...
Right now it's a year.
Yeah. But once you sell that home and somebody takes it over to occupy it, then it's on them.
It's on them.
Now, are you building for... Are you doing spec homes or are you building for...
They're
buyers?
Pretty much pre-sold, most of them. And I keep three on the market.
Okay. Then you shouldn't have a problem if you're pre-building them.
Yeah,
because... People that are moving into them are going to want to put a yard in.
Yeah, but a lot of people barely qualify for a certain amount, so that throws them over.
So you got a whole range of issues is what you're talking
there's
about.
There's a whole range of issues.
So
but real quick, before I forget,
mm-hmm.
So we have a year, but I don't think we've been enforcing it. We have not been enforcing it. I have, you know... Somebody came up to me on that issue right there on First, and he was not informed on a lot of situations that's going on there. You guys know the blacktop, the landscaping. And he asked me, what should I do? I said, you know what? You got to get it done. So I gave him advice, you know, since you were not told and you were not guided, ask council to give you some leeway. I'm pretty sure we'll abide by it. That was my opinion, just an opinion. So... We want to go ahead and take this off and make sure that the yards are in, but there's been no enforcement on this.
Can I say one thing? I don't know who told you that, but I can almost assure you that he was told about the requirement for landscaping based on my sources. So, I see it here and there, but as far as enforcement, yeah, you're right. We haven't been...
So are they written down?
I don't know that.
Well, if they're not written down, it means nothing.
I know. Got it. I'm just saying, it was supposedly so we can go back and forth on this. But
see, I will keep going back to the same thing. When people come to build here in Othello, and I'm going to take the situation that happened to me. I went to Moses Lake. They sat me down for 3 hours. Exactly what needed to be done. A through Z. You know. So people come and want to build here, commercial building or whatever it might be. You just hand them a permit. And then later you tell them, well, you have to add this, you have to put this on it. A lot of people come in here with a budget. If you have a budget, it's hard to slap on them another 15, 20, 30 grand. And we don't have that as a city. We do not have it. We've talked about that in the past. If somebody comes into town, we should have it all written down. This is what needs to be done. And I believe Ann and Tim are doing a good job because they've caught a lot of stuff that I'm going to say Bill has been getting away with. So that's a good thing. I'm for the city, you know, but also I'm for the builder as well because we need guidance.
Well, it makes you It gives you the opportunity to make a decision upfront whether or not you can afford to invest in the city of Othello.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
If there's, as you know, if we're not willing to enter into developers agreements with certain individuals with certain developments, they cannot undertake the full liability, the full cost of that development. But yet we want to grow to the next area on the other side of them or something. So if a guy doesn't know that, he gets started in doing something and we haven't discussed that and fully presented that to him before he, you know, makes a decision on wanting to build and buys land and gets invested in it, then that's not right. We need to correct that.
So let me address that. And I've got to defend my staff here because we spend many hours, and as Terry, Tim, and maybe what didn't take place in the past, but we spend many hours sitting down with people who come in, and they bring us a proposal. Sometimes it's a back of a napkin type proposal, and we say, oh, here's what you got to do. And then what will happen after that, they'll come in with a different set of plans, and which changes the requirements, whether it be setbacks, whether it be whatever. And so we sit down with them again for several hours sometimes and go through that. And then the same person will come in with a different set. And so when it changes like that, it's hard to give somebody a cut and dried solution if they're going to change those. Now, if they don't change them, that's a different story. If they haven't changed them and we haven't told them, shame on us. And I'll take full responsibility for that.
Yeah, but we're talking about landscaping and blacktop here. That person that come up to me and said, what, did they read the OMCs to you? And I said, yeah, what did they say? That we need to put landscaping and blacktop. Okay, there you go.
So well, could I request council?
But I'd like these, you know, more clearness for these people that are applying.
And what I'm telling you is, with Ann in place now, we have started doing that. Okay, if that's not been done, I haven't heard about it. And as far as the situation we're talking about, let's talk about that offline, and we'll try and figure that out.
Okay.
But as far as moving forward, and to your point, okay, I firmly believe that we are making a better effort to tell people up front, as long as they bring us their plans and what they want to do, and they don't change them, then we give them the correct things. But if they change them, then, you know,
first thing I'm thinking in my mind when you're saying that they start with one plan and then they come back with another plan, probably because they couldn't afford the one plan.
I don't know that.
Because
no, that's not necessary.
If you do this, then you're going to have to do this for the next step.
John, you're speculating.
And that may be so, but that's...
Yeah, you're just speculating. I want to go back to Angel, because I had a question about the...
landscaping?
Yeah. So you sell the mayor a house 6 months later, but you don't include the yard, because that's not in the sale price. And 7-8 months goes by, the mayor hasn't put in a yard. You don't have any... thing to do with me putting in the yard anymore, do you?
As a builder, if I once closing
once you close on the deal,
no,
it's my place.
I do not.
Yeah, and so then
that's why I said, you know, there's
so
no
then it's up to the city to come back around and say the certificate of occupancy had a condition, and the condition was yard's got to be put in within a year. So I mean, we've had all kinds of ranges of discussion about this. Should we put in a front and a backyard? Should we require, tonight's the first night I've heard discussion of, well, in lieu of yard, desertscape. And so those are all good items of discussion, and I really appreciate. Do you have something, Charles?
I have a quick question. Who is the certificate of occupancy?
The buyer.
Builder. I have to hand that in for the buyer at closing.
Sorry. Okay. I stand corrected.
So under that, then, is it in the buyer's name? Meaning, whose name is on that certificate of occupancy?
No.
It's
a builder.
So when does the year start? From the time somebody actually buys that house, or from the time he's issued that certificate of occupancy?
When it's issued.
When it's issued.
So if he's got a house that doesn't sell for 6 months,
then there's no problem.
It doesn't matter if it doesn't matter if it doesn't sell, because we're starting from occupancy. So if I get it today, 6 months from today, either it's on me or the buyer.
The time starts with the certificate of occupancy is given, or when somebody buys the house.
It would start if he rented it.
You have to have the occupancy before you sell a house.
Okay, here's
so it's day of occupancy.
So here's the real question then that we should all be asking, and what is our code? Does our code give us any leeway to come back on the builder if the yard isn't? It would only be upon the buyer. Okay. Yeah.
Whoever owns the property at that time, which could still be the builder after a year, but.
Mm-hmm.
So as a builder, I keep going back. So you go to the Tri-Cities, see how many yards are put in. They're booming. So here we are in a little town that things are starting to move, and we're putting too many rules and regulations. I mean, let's abide by what we have to abide, but let's work with each other if we want to grow. I mean, if you go to, I don't know how many houses Olson has without a yard. I do not know.
I don't either.
You know, in our development, most of the yards are done. Now, in our contract, it states you have to have a yard in by 6 months, within 6 months. At least we're doing that. That's part of the process for in the paperwork. That's why I said that's what we can do as a builder, but then as far as enforcing it, I cannot enforce it because I do not own the house.
That's
the city's liable for that.
City has to enforce it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kelly, what do you see?
What do I see?
Yeah. So we got in Spokane Valley, they're building houses down there. Spokane is just booming right now.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, they have low inventory.
So the requirement, most of the state has the same requirement of within a year, you have to have the yard in. I talked to one of the two code enforcement officers over the years. She's only ever enforced two because everybody else puts their yard in within a year. It's just part of what you do. And so I think maybe it's just a matter of we need to shift, get people to understand that you really need to do this, and that probably will take care of itself for the most part.
Yeah. Typically, you know, I've seen it both ways. I've seen how Othello's is set up, and I've also seen it in places where they do require that to be in before a certificate of occupancy is issued. And I think, I mean, you can go either way. I guess it just depends. It's a policy decision that the council needs to make on, you know, where they want to fall, you know, come down on that. You know, I do think sort of Spokane Valley, for example, they're very complaint-driven enforcement. They don't do a lot of investigation, not a lot of proactive code violation issues that really go out and look for it. It's complaint-driven. And so I would see that those issues like that would usually be, you know, if somebody complains about it, then they think it'd be important enough to get a code enforcement officer out there and start to take action.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this council wants that type of policy for code enforcement, or if they want to be more proactive. I mean, I think that would be one thing to consider in determining what kind of policy you want to have. And do you want to have a self-executing policy, which would be this idea of requiring a certificate of occupancy, requiring the front yard to be done before you issue the occupancy certificate? Or do you want something where the city is going to have to, you know, the onus is on the city to detect violations and correct them? You know, that's kind of a policy goal. And there's pluses and minuses. I mean, obviously for builders, there's an incentive to have it on the back end, whereas from a beautification standpoint and efficiency standpoint, solely from the city's perspective, a self-executing policy makes it can be better. But I think it'd be a good issue for the city to have a public hearing on and, you know, schedule up for public hearing and get public input and really come up and see what the community wants and give the business individuals who have an interest in it avenue to voice their opinions, and citizens who are impacted by it can voice their opinions. And when you have the information with the Planning Commission, you can take all that into consideration and figure out which policy the council would like to move.
I think that would be good.
So, real quick, when we went through that permit issue, you know, we took a ballpark of what other communities are paying, and we kind of stayed, you know, right in between. And I was with them, I was for that. So I say, when it comes to landscaping, let's see what everybody else is doing. It's only fair.
Already spoken, and what we found is most of them don't have much in the way of enforcement, and we don't know if that's because it's not a problem or if they don't care. But
yeah, and it can be a problem. But one thing is that, you know, I do not only enforce it throughout the 6 months, but even before at signing. I said, if you want this neighborhood to have value, you got to make sure you keep it up like everybody else. There's always going to be a bad apple.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, it's going to work out. And in my point of view, you know, closing with, you know, working with so many people, a lot of times $5,000 is $5,000, and you won't close because of $5,000. You're just over the limit, believe it or not. And there's been a lot of people that have walked off because of that. So for now if we're going to impose another $5,000, because that's what it costs you, it's about $5,000 by the time you put your curb, your sprinkler system, and your yard in front. Maybe more now because everything's going up. So it could slow us down a little bit. I like to boom like every other city around us. That's what I want for this city. And I just want to work together with you guys.
Okay.
I'm going to hear from more people on this, so I think a public hearing would be good.
Okay, so I agree.
The night before the meetings.
I got one thing, just like he was saying there. If people come, I mean, they've got all their savings, they're going to buy this house, and like he says, even $1,000, they might not be able to make the payment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you can go buy a bag of grass or enough to do a yard.
$15.
For a lot less than, you know, what they would charge to do it.
Yeah, but then,
they can get it in. And I know it's, a lot of people can't afford that.
That's a good point, Mark, because they go by debt to ratio. And $5,000 is going to blow them out of the water sometimes.
Right.
Just five, I mean, like you said, even $1,000.
My question would be this. If some people come to Othello and want to see Othello, I take them up to your residence up here where everything looks nice. And you got restrictions, you got, you know, 6 months, a year, whatever. My thought is, what are we doing with the 50% of the population that don't really give a damn? They don't have yards, they park in their on their lawn, they got five or six cars parked all over. And you mentioned to them about putting it on, they're just going to laugh at you. Hey, I've lived in this place 20 years, never, don't even own a lawnmower.
It's all in enforcing it.
Yeah, I know that. But how do you enforce something like that?
Yeah, you got to have something.
Well, you know, I like to look at stuff like this, because if you go down Sprague in Spokane, if you would have drove by there 15 years ago or even 7, 8 years ago, that was pretty bad. You drive through there now, almost every building has been redone.
Reface.
I mean,
Yeah. There's
got to be a start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So if we as a city don't start enforcing it, well, people are not going to care. But enforcing it means a lot. It takes a lot of work. It's not easy.
But to enforce it, it's got to have teeth in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it has teeth. So, it's an orange tooth.
But that's the thing. A lot of times in the past, I think that there's been violations built into the code, but they had no teeth, and there were no fines, there was nothing.
There you go, yeah.
So they said, well, you're in violation, well, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
If it doesn't have teeth in it, it won't go anywhere.
To address Council McCourty's statement, and your concerns about enforcement, that's why we put Heather on as a full-time code enforcement, and she has been working full-time, literally, finding these. And I would ask that if you do see those, give her a call. If you see one, like I've been, when I take my dogs out in the morning for a walk, if I see something, I come back and say, Heather, this address, they got, they're running over the curb and parked on the yard. And she goes and gives them a ticket, and like Ann said, there's already teeth in our code for that. It's a class, whatever, something,
see,
code violation,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. increasing amounts. So it's just a matter of enforcement, I think, as you said, Angel, is that'll change the mindset as we enforce that. It's a slow process, but as we enforce it, I think we'll see a change.
If you want to leave it at a year or take it down to 6 months, whatever you want to do, let's put a price on it. You know, if it's not done by this date, there's a fine. And if that fine is not paid, if you don't do it within 30 days from that, fine's going to double. It'll get done.
Yeah, we have something in place, but I think we need to discuss what it is. And so I think, let me try and land this airplane if I can. I think, and at the next Planning Commission meeting, I think the discussion that we've had could be communicated to them. They can add to that discussion. They can deviate from that part of the discussion, but let them know that we intend to hold a public hearing before we take any final action. And certainly the council would appreciate any recommendations that the Planning Commission would give us with regard to these issues. We would hold a public hearing, and then the council can take action that night, or the council can take it under advisement and continue to study it. Maybe they want more information, and that would be some of the stuff. Of course, if we're going to change our ordinance, then of course that would have to be done in cooperation not only with Ann, but also with Kelly. So that's as I see this process unfolding. Does the council like that idea?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
All right, Angel. Mr. Developer, Angel, in your development, are you running? We're running a main line of purple pipe, right? Are you putting the turnouts in the purple pipe?
Turnout which direction? Well, yes.
To the house. Services,
you mean?
Yeah, the service. Are you providing, is the developer providing the service to each home?
Yes. And they're subbing to the existing homes to the south. Awesome. And we're running a
Well, let's rephrase that. Because the city's paying for the non-potable water.
The city is.
And you guys are in charge of tonight.
Okay, so everybody on the south side of Olympia is going to have access to irrigation water?
Yes.
Good. Excellent. And that's part of what we're covering under our developer's agreement?
And we step Excellent. Down 7th to the school so they can pull their irrigation off the city water and move irrigation water.
That's going to be awesome right there. Save a lot of water. It's a big yard.
Terrific.
So for Hiawatha, Hiawatha is going to be all?
Yeah.
Irrigation water?
As long as I'm meeting with a school superintendent Friday, that's one of the issues I'm going to discuss with him to make sure they're going to tap into that. It's a million. How many gallons a year, Spencer? We looked up. It's over a million gallons a year.
Oh, at least.
It's over a million.
Yeah. Probably a month. Great. Okay.
Good.
Okay. All right. Like at the record show that Councilman Angel Garza is rejoining the dais. So, on item 5, unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business to come before the council tonight?
I just got a couple things. When is the weed guy coming to spray? We still do that, right? They come and spray the curbs and
the alleys. Okay.
And then weeds in people's yards and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is about the time Heather starts doing that enforcement action. Again, if you see something, let us know about it. You know, call Heather directly, whatever, and she'll go out there. Sometimes you'll miss something. I know, again, when I see it, I let her know. And so this is about the time here it gets bad.
I go by the car wash down there. Right across
from by the laundromat down there?
Yeah.
The blue one?
And I see two or three cars. I don't know if they're living in that place, but if they are, they need to, the weeds are starting to take over out in front of it, the doors and everything.
We're on it.
Huh?
We're on it.
Well, I knew that. Conversation.
And just because a building on Main Street is condemned doesn't mean that they don't need to take care of it.
It's still owned by someone. So
right.
It is up for sale, by the way.
I'll give him $5,000 for it.
Get
I'll give him five. You know, it's going to take 95 to get it demolished.
What are they asking?
99.
Okay, so we had some unfinished business with regard to the dispatch update, and we have tonight AC David Rim is here. He'll give us an update.
We've been continuing to collect information regarding the dispatch console from, now we have two proposals back. We're still waiting on the third. They promised they're going to be looking at stuff, but we haven't received it back today, as of today. So we do have two solid proposals. Both of them also include working on the Quantar radio upstairs. So,
okay.
That's what we got.
Questions? Thank you, AC.
You've got quotes for them already?
Yeah, well, I'm still calling them proposals because of, you know, the budget system and things like that. But we're getting a ballpark of how much it's going to cost, yes.
How does it compare to what the county brought to us?
A lot less.
And how does the equipment compare?
It is different brand, all of it. That is true.
So will it connect with their stuff?
If needed, yes. The stuff that I have seen with the proposals, yes. If it came down to it, they could.
Okay. All right, so we'll wait for the additional update when you get that last proposal.
Yeah, and I'm surprised it's taken them this long.
Yeah, me too. So, okay, thank you. Any other business to come before the council tonight? Let the record show that the city had an interpreter present if it was necessary, and the city council made that available. There was a start time, there was an end time, and there was a vote by the council. So, very good. Any other business tonight? Having nothing further, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 7:38 p.m.